we're talking about helping those who are grieving, and we'd be good with a sheet of some ideas that we can talk about. I suggest maybe that as you talk about them, call attention to them, not just by number, but by reading them, so that for those who are listening in other places, they know what we're talking about. Okay. Any comments on those you've seen here?
I hunch, I don't know from experience, but I hunch that helping another person with the grieving process will also help oneself who is grieving.
I agree with that. I think a lot of us who are in the business of helping other people through grief in one way or another are doing that because it's a way to help ourselves. I remember when my son died, I hugged everybody who came to the door. Anybody who rang my doorbell got a hug from me. And, of course, that was my way of comforting them, of course. And also a way to receive a hug for myself that I very much needed at that point in time. So I would agree with that. Your reference is to number 5, to touch, hug, hold, offer a supporting arm, shake hands. But be sensitive to the desires of the other. You may see that, because there are some people who really don't like to be touched. And they send us pretty strong signals that they would rather we didn't do that. And that's a problem. I mean, then it's our need. And we're really not helping them. Mm-hmm.
The number 1, be there in the hospital, at the funeral, in the home, and so forth. Just before I left King City, a dear friend of mine, mostly through church, was dying, and she was in a coma, and she was in intensive care, and so I asked her daughter if I couldn't go see her, since I was leaving town and I wouldn't be there for the funeral, and so she gave me permission to go. And of course, that was for me all the way through, because, and I'm not a singer, but I sang a song to her and held her hand.
Good.
And that was good for me, because I just think she had so many little pearls of wisdom. She's probably up there in heaven just distributing all her pearls of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to be 84 her next birthday, and she'd been in Bible classes with me, and was just very dear to me. So that one was definitely for me, but I also believe from my own experience, although Vern went so fast, my husband went so fast, that but the people at the funeral and the people that came from far away, just friends. I'm talking about far away as being 200 miles or more, you know. It just meant so much to me that they were there.
Yes.
And even though I didn't get to spend that much time with them, really, because I was surrounded by family, and there was family that I felt needed taking care of, but just the fact that they were there meant a lot to me.
I think people often don't realize how important it is for survivors that you're present at the funeral. It's so sad when there are just a handful of people at the funeral. And when there are a lot of people, I know when my son died, the church was packed. And that in itself was a message to us. It was a way of saying that there were a lot of people who cared.
Yeah.
When my sister died, there were people who came from Minnesota, where she had once been a director of Christian education. Her burial was in Milwaukee, and they drove down. We talked to them only briefly at the cemetery, and often after I wondered, oh my, they came such a long way for such a little bit, and we gave them so little. And I don't know their names at all, but for me, it was very important and very meaningful that they came at this
point.
Several years ago, my father lost through death his wife at that time, my stepmother. And he was a person that was very dependent on his wife, my stepmother. This practically ran his life and hers also. And when she died, he was just left out. He didn't know what to do or where to go. But I found myself stepping in on occasion after occasion, and your statement here in number four, of legal matters, finances, household chores. And I found that he was attempting by every means at his disposal to seduce me into doing these things. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very difficult because he was along in years. He was 80. One would assume that at age 80, a person needs help.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we help, then he throws everything on us.
Mm-hmm.
Just lays back and says, gee, now you're taking care of me. I don't need to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, he was able to. He was quite alert and able. He subsequently got ill and died himself. But that was down the road quite a way.
Mm-hmm.
And what I had to do was to fight an awful lot of guilt feelings about not things for him that he could do himself.
Yes. That's a real mixed bag.
Yeah.
I have done that for 17 years with my mother, trying to decide where it's too much and where it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we ever really know.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes the business of stepping into other people's lives and trying to take it over. And in fact, there are some people that's their need. They really need.
Oh, my dad
step
would have loved that for me to take everything over.
Yeah. Or people on the other end of the stick who need to take over other people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so there's kind of a caution in there. A lot of things you have to teach, like the legal matters,
mm-hmm.
or how to mm-hmm. balance the checkbook or whatever it is, and then leave. And that's hard.
One thing I'm having a hard time doing right now, and I'd like to just have somebody take it over,
mm-hmm.
is making a decision on a car.
Mm-hmm.
My car only has 80,000 miles on it, but I feel it's a lemon, and I've put too much money into it already,
mm-hmm.
and I need to get rid of it, but I don't know how to make my next decision.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of car do I need?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be driving up and down the coast?
Mm-hmm.
From California to Washington so many times that I need a better car that I can trust.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a secondhand car in the 70s is a better car to trust
mm-hmm.
than the ones in the 80s because
mm-hmm.
they're getting so computerized.
Mm-hmm.
And if a computer goes out, you don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about writing a letter tonight and asking a friend of my daughter's if he would consider my car's right there in Port Angeles, if he'd consider going around to the places and seeing what he thought would be a good car for me. And because he knows a lot about cars, but then I think, you know, maybe that's a decision I have to make, and it'd be good for me to go looking for cars. But I don't really think so.
Well, I don't know. When it comes to buying cars, I don't know that you have to be grieving. I think we all end up in that kind of position with cars,
but
and never really knowing, you know, is this going to be a good one or a lemon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's nice to have somebody help you look for a car who knows something about cars.
I would suggest that buying a car is expertise of other persons than yourself, obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's legitimate to say to mm-hmm. someone, hey, I know nothing about cars, but you do.
Mm-hmm.
Could you help me in determining which would be a
mm-hmm.
good buy? But I think prior to that time, you could start to list things that you need in an automobile.
Yeah.
You need dependability, and you need, I don't know how much space you'd need in it, or how many doors, or anything of that kind.
No, I like four doors.
Okay, in your estimation, you'd like four doors. Those kinds of things you could make a listing of, so that
yeah.
whoever helped you said, here are some parameters.
And I can easily do that.
Yeah.
But I don't want top of the line, I know that too.
Well, that's another item to listen to.
And my husband liked top of the line. He liked the luxury of a nice car, and we've got the top of the line of a Buick. And it's got 80,000 miles on it, which to me it should have 75,000 miles more left on it. But I've already put $2,000 into it, and I just feel now there's another major item there that has to be done, and I just don't feel I should go any further. But then I'm anxious to get back to California, and I've got to do that when I get to Fort Angeles, rather than wait till I get back to California. But things like this that I sometimes get angry about. Vern, you've left me with all this. What do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes. He's a little angry with him for leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the real issue, mightn't it? Not the car.
Could be. I'm not sure. As I told you, you know, I don't even know whether I have grieved. I feel that I have, and I feel that it is good for me to come here and talk to you and to talk to the group yesterday. I don't know that I need to join a group when I get, well, I don't think there is a group in King City. I'd have to go out of the town to get to it.
Widowed persons?
Well, I've got friends. We've got a little circle that we've lost our husbands within the last 3-4 years. And that's a pretty good support group.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have that in your circle of friends. You have the support you need. So long as you have a place to do your talking, I wouldn't worry about judging myself as to whether or not I grieved appropriately. I think just let it happen what needs to happen. How do you feel about 10? Be careful and sensitive in your use of God talk. Although the grieving person needs to be reminded of the presence of a loving God, it is often very difficult to believe during intense grief. Demonstrations of God's love in your continued presence are a more powerful statement than words which may, at least for now, have lost all meaning. I wonder if, as Christians, we are really willing to allow that in other people. We might be more willing to allow it in ourselves, but are we willing to allow other people some of the feelings and thoughts and ideas they may have for a while about God?
I feel I'm pretty open to their feelings about God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they need to be listened to more than any comments from you.
Yeah.
You just need to listen. They want you to just listen. They don't necessarily want you to approve or disapprove.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to be able to express them.
That's right. I think that's good.
Because I know this friend of mine that ended up writing a prayer after I'd expressed my feelings about this God of my youth, she wrote a prayer for me, and it was just really expressed my feelings very well.
Good.
And
she listened to you well.
Right. And she had come 235 miles to the funeral. And of course, we'd known each other for many years, too. So she knew me very well. But she went home, and the night she got home from the funeral, why, she sat down and typed it and sent it to me. And I've given it to other people that I felt might be feeling those same things.
Sure. I think that's a helpful thing to do. It's helpful thing for you as you reach out that way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I think in my experience, it's been in a sense the reverse of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
With my relatives who are much more involved in religion than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And they make what to me sometimes are outrageous claims about what God has done or what he's going to do,
mm-hmm.
or she. Although I don't dare say that to them because of their traditional approach to religion, but they are certain that God has involved himself in the death of the person to the point where he either allowed it or made it happen, and that they are now resting with him. And they make such a point of this that sometimes I think they protest too much.
Mm.
And I think that has affected my own views toward toward the religion which they profess.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see how anybody can be that certain
mm-hmm.
of something which is as unknown as God's purposes or God's way of doing things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I haven't had this experience of persons in a sense losing their faith because of grieving or being angry mm-hmm. at God and those kinds of things.
I don't think I ever felt like I lost my faith. I was I just wanted to speak out to him because my husband and I were having such a good time, and I just wanted to continue with that good time, and I just wanted to talk to somebody about it, and God's always there listening, so I just talked to him about it.
And figured he was big enough to handle whatever yeah, he had to say.
Right.
I'm also interested that you referred to him as the God of your youth, because I think that as we grow older and as we encounter a variety of experiences, that there needs to be a change in our concept of God, in our picture of God. C.S. Lewis has some words that I fond of quoting. He says, God is the great iconoclast. Iconoclast is an idol buster. And the idol that he has in the business of busting is our idol, which is God. We have this image of God, which we have decided this is who God is and how he is. And God has to shatter that image again and again in order to show us more clearly who he is.
I can appreciate that, because so often we attempt to force God into a human mold.
Yes.
Instead of allowing him to be the omnipotent. And,
and that's force, exactly what we do, is if we force him into a human mold, he's much too small. He's much bigger than that.
And we need to lose that God. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have that idol shattered in order to get a new picture. So some of this, my own attitude is that people aren't really so often leaving the faith or falling away from God as they are in the business of changing, and that God is in the business of changing them in order to give them a different view.
I think the most traumatic death that I have experienced in my life was that of my mother,
mm-hmm.
who died in my arms when I was just a young person. And as I remember back, I had no thoughts about being angry at God or anything of that kind, because she died of a heart attack. It's just kind of a thing that hits a lot of persons. It wasn't any mysterious thing, but a very natural kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself being preoccupied more with, as a young person, I was often insensitive and thoughtless, because she was invalided for a couple of years prior to her death. And looking back now as an adult, I can see where a lot of things I could have done different. And of course, this is, as King Lear said, in that direction lies madness.
Yes.
But I still find myself doing it.
My mother died in May, and I'm an adult, etc. But I can see now a lot of things I could have done differently. And you can, when you begin to do that, you can begin to beat yourself up a lot. And I think we have to then return again and again to the cross, to the forgiveness that Christ gives.
Right.
There's always something we could have done differently.
Yes.
That's right.
I think there's just no end of that.
And I think Christians suffer from guilt so much that we need to get rid of this. We take our problems to God in prayer, but then we just take them right back again and keep on carrying them.
You almost feel guilty if you don't feel guilty yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good statement. But here we're supposed to look at how do we help others.
Yes. At God Talk, one for me, thinking of two particular things. One was when my father-in-law died. My father-in-law was a pastor. He was in his 80s when he died. And his wife was also very devout. However, when he died and we were there at the house, my husband said, "We need to call your pastor and have him come over." And she said, "We do? Well, all right. Have him come and get it over with." That's really kind of interesting. I will never forget a lady who came to my house who was the mother of one of my son's friends. I had never met this lady before, but she introduced herself to me at the door as a prayer warrior, and she would not leave. She kept saying, "I want to pray with you," but there were a lot of other people around, a lot of things going on. Finally, we realized this lady wasn't going to go anywhere until she did her praying. So I finally said to people, "Look, let her pray, so she'll leave." So we let her pray. Her prayer had nothing to do with our concern. She didn't know us well enough to come and pray for us. But this was her need. She was acting out her need. And I think we have to remember that when we deal with other grieving people, that very often we want to be sensitive to the other person, to what is their need, to what are they asking for, what will truly be helpful to them, and a little less concerned about what our need is at that point.
But it was a load on you to take care of her needs when you had some of your own at that point.
It was the easiest way on earth to get rid of her.
I agree. I think that I was thinking in my head what I would have done, and I think I would have just told the group that here is a person who has a need to do this, and can you accommodate her for just a few moments while she does this?
Yeah.
One of the neatest things I've had about praying is going to the hospital to see someone that was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in pain and he didn't want me to be there very long.
Mm-hmm.
And I had probably just gone in and said hello to them and hardly anything else. And he grasped my hand and he says, "Let's pray."
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we prayed together, and then I left.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost felt that he asked me to pray because he wanted me to leave.
Because
he was still in a lot of pain.
It's possible, but I suspect that people don't ask for prayer unless they are wanting that. I think we forget a lot of times that prayer is doing some of these other things. It's a strange definition of prayer, I know. But preparing a meal, mowing the lawn, drawing a picture. I heard a person one time talk about there was a death in her family. If I remember rightly, it was a mother in another state. And there were like 6 children in this family. And they were frantically trying to get ready to leave and go to the funeral. She said a neighbor came over, said nothing, quietly went around and polished all of her kids' shoes for the funeral and left. And she said it was the greatest blessing that she could have had, because it was one thing she didn't have to think about. You know, I'm not good at walking into someone else's house and knowing what needs to be done. But there are people who have that special talent.
I do.
And I think, oh, those people are really precious.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, they are, in a sense, that's prayer and answer to prayer all wrapped up together.
And you know, it's a form of, I think living in a small town or a small area and knowing everyone, it seemed as a child that we had our own hospice going constantly in this small town of 1,000 people. Because my grandparents, I saw them lose all their friends, and I saw them go and sit the night with their sick friends and take food over there. And it was just a natural hospice. Mm-hmm. And we've become so mobile that we have to organize hospice now.
Yeah.
It seemed to me I dealt with death a lot as a child, going through the generations of my grandparents and then my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And now I am that age, and I'm losing friends.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And a part of what you're building on is what you learned from
your parents. Right.
Right. Yeah, I think our tendency to larger cities and having people moving around is that we lose some of that we have to create new communities. I always hope that the church is that kind of community,
mm-hmm.
Place where I like to think of our church in Michigan as that kind of community. It's the most special church I've ever been part of because people really do reach out and seek to help each other when they have a problem. I know of good many churches where they've got thousands of members and nothing seems to happen in terms of care for each other. And I wonder then about that purpose for me.
Well, one thing I've heard many widows express is that my church was really there for me through the funeral and maybe a week afterwards. But then what happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, then they forgot about me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've heard that too, you know, and that can be. Why do you think that happens?
Probably a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. One of which may be that the person is so dependent that the church members aren't able to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that if she gets help, it means that she's going to look for more help. And I think in her case, the person you're talking about, had she involved herself in groups at the church to the point where her visibility was evident, then possibly she would have gotten more support from persons as a result of her just being there.
Thinking about people who may, you know, almost absent themselves from society, who kind of, I don't know what I'm saying, this is your friend.
Wait for help to come.
In wait. Or refuse help. My mother was the kind of person who regularly refused help. She always turned help away. It was very, very hard on other people who knew she had needs. She had food needs. People would bring their food, she'd give it back to them. I don't eat that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it becomes very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
kind of a contest.
Yes, it does become that. So with some people, you have to really find ways to hang in there. For other people, though, and this could also be your friend. That's how people respond after that first initial thing. They're there for the funeral dinner, maybe call once or twice after that. But then they go on about their business. And what happens on Sunday morning when that person walks into church? People, I think, often don't know how to respond. They may know how at first to hug, say I'm sorry, etc. But now it's a month later. And the question arises, do I still hug?
Yeah, because life is going on in the meantime.
Yeah. Do I still say I'm sorry?
Yeah.
I don't want to hurt her and open that all up for them again. You know, you have some of those kind of things.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you don't know what to do. And then what happens, you got this avoidance thing that happens.
Right.
Since I don't know what to do, I'll just hurry up and not see them, and then I won't have to do anything.
Well, this is certainly a place where the pastor or the board of deacons or a specially formed group whose job it is to keep in touch with mm-hmm. persons who have problems can report back to the congregation that here's a person who maybe need a little extra support over mm-hmm. a longer period of time.
Sure.
So there's positive things.
How long do you think someone who's lost a loved one needs support?
Well, I suppose it varies with the individual person. Mm-hmm. Maybe years for one and 2 weeks right. for another.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it depends how warm your church is, too, you know. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of hugging in my little church, mm-hmm. and so I do believe that you need more hugs, mm-hmm. Because you're missing out on hugs
yes.
from your loved one.
So you need to be touched.
Yeah. So you need more touching.
One of the arguments I have heard, and it's not valid, but there's a truth in it, as in all arguments. One of the arguments against woman pastors that I have heard is that all the widows in the church appreciate that contact on Sunday morning with a male. A man to shake their hand and a man to give them a hug because they don't get that contact otherwise. Well, that's, to me, not a valid argument for women pastors. But the truth in it is we have developed a society where men don't hug women and vice versa very often because that can create problems of its own. And yet, what is so bad for the woman who is grieving to have a man in the congregation come up and give her a hug or the pastor or what have you?
We've got a bunch of men that goes around hugging all the
Good.
Widows.
Good. Good. When you touch.
And there are a bunch of younger men, too, mm-hmm. you know. But I do think that you miss the male contact in your life. Mm-hmm. In some way or other, you may be able to get it mm-hmm. Through work, mm-hmm. through Bible study.
Family members, brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just conversation with mm-hmm. them. To talk to women all the time gets tiresome.
It works the other way. Does it work the other way that men don't get enough hugs from women?
I don't know. I have had no experience in that arena.
The reason I mentioned that yesterday, one of the things in our group I intended was that after people had discussed that I was going to ask all the people who had shared together to hug each other. And I didn't do that. I was out in the hall before I remembered it. I came back in here and one group was still kind of working, and as the man in it talked about the fact that when his child died, there were a total of 5 people who hugged him, and he said, and it was that one time, and that was it. And he was obviously saying that hugs would have felt good for him
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that it can work both ways.
I think another thing that could be happening, I can't see it really happening or being valid in a thing like a loss, but I do believe that there are so many more women than men that the women soon get the feeling that maybe that man's going to think I'm coming on to him.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being friendly
yes.
and loving.
Yes. Or the man's wife beginning to think see the widow as a threat.
Yeah.
Those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to be aware of all of those things. They're all part of our society.
Yeah. Because I had a boss once that
yes,
went through a divorce.
Next door to help you.
And he had so many lunches that he brought to work that I shared the lunches because of all these women in these apartments
oh,
fixing
yes.
lunch
oh,
for them.
I see.
Oh, okay. Okay. So there are some mixed bags here.
Yeah.
And how do we decide when we've gone past the point of being helpful, maybe, and need to be a little cautious about what we're doing? I think on the back page, on the second page, there's a couple of things there, too, that you maybe should talk about. Number 16, for instance, asking grieving people for help. One of the things that we do is say, oh, so-and-so is grieving, I don't think we should ask them to do such and such. And in a sense, if we are doing is Xing them out.
Yeah.
We're saying, well, we have to decide, let them make their choice. They may say no for a year, and that's their privilege. But do continue to ask, do continue to ask grieving people. To try, continue to invite. I think being needed helps people live again.
I do too.
When our son died, one of the things Tom had done, he was one of these people who always liked to get things going. We were at that time at a church in Illinois where the youth group was active but isolated. They were turned in on themselves. They never involved any other group, youth groups. They never went to anything outside of their own. So he had worked very hard to get them to a state meeting that was held in the Chicago area. And he had in fact made a major sacrifice to go with them. He had spent so much time urging them to do this and inviting them. When it came down to it, that they finally agreed to go. And when it came down to the time to go, he was on the swim team at school. And their swim team unexpectedly won and needed to go to the championships, and that was at the same time. Oh. And he was stuck with the choice of letting down his swim team, letting down his youth group. And he wanted me to help him make that decision, and I said, God, there's just no way I could. That whatever choice he made there, he'd have to make on his own. He chose to go with the youth group.
I think that's the best one, because he had a prior engagement to the swim team, and it was really unreasonable of the swimming thing to, at the last moment, say, we got this. There could have been preparation on the part of the coach there, that if we win, set these dates aside.
Yeah. Well, whatever. He went with the youth group.
Yeah.
After he died, I think he died on the 1st of August. In September, the youth group was going to another thing. It was the second time around. And they needed someone to go with them, and I went with them. I went out of my need to be with these young people who were so important to him. And that was helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone there made the comment, your son just died and you came anyway. I came as much for me as for any other reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of the many things that brings us back.
Yeah.
You know, whatever our particular interests are, to get back with them, to be involved.
Yeah, and I think your initial statement, kind of in a generic sense, that it's very presumptuous of us to decide what another person would like to do or not to do. And the thing is to check with them and find out, to test.
And to keep on checking. Mm-hmm. So they tell you no.
Yeah.
That's fine. They have to go back again and again.
But a different situation may elicit a different response.
Yes, that's right.
I just went with the youth group. It was the middle school, from Port Angeles to PLU, to spend an overnight trip. And that was real good for me.
Sure.
And most of the kids call me Grandma.
Yes.
And so, yes.
Is it your being here in itself kind of helpful to you? Being here, whether or not you're involved in this discussion.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I've been working real hard, and that's real good for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have been real tired, where I've really been playing a lot, you know, and not working this hard. But I've gone home and taken a nap in the afternoon. I've been so tired. Now, today, this was my fourth day, and I wasn't so tired, so I went for a 2-mile walk, and that was good. Oh, there's so much beauty around here.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. There are lots of ways
that
you can be helpful to yourself. And maybe some of the things that help you don't help the other person. But that's the way we learn. And the things that have helped us, we try out with other people. Cards, letters, phone calls, anniversary days, and on the back here. Oh, things like the mother-daughter banquet and everything for someone who's just experienced the death of a mother or the death of a daughter. These will open wounds afresh. It's a good time to do some adopting or a company picnic, you know. We've always gone with your husband, and now he's not there. To have someone invite you to that company picnic and say, come with us, I know that you've always enjoyed being here in the past. Those kind of things, to open up doors for people again. Seem kind of cruel. I'd like to, unless you have an objection, move on to the grieving grief helpers, page 3. Does that fit right before you?
Sure.
Sometimes, as it says on here, the grief helpers are family members who are also grieving. When dad dies, daughter's grieving. When a child dies, brothers and sisters are grieving. Adult children grieve for the parent who died, and yet they may feel that it's their place now to be a grief helper. And so they're kind of trying to shuck some of their own grief. And at the same time, well, I did this, I know, with my mom. When my dad died, and it's kind of a long time ago, my dad died in 70. But one of my ways of dealing with my grief was to see what I could do for my mom, to take care of my mom. Mm-hmm. You know? The grieving people aren't always the best grief helpers. Sometimes they are. Certainly want to stay in there for each other. But maybe we'll look at some of these points here, see if any of them ring home to you.
Well, I think number 5 has the most meaning for me at this point.
Mm-hmm. You want to read it when I'm out?
It's grief over role reversal, the necessity of becoming parents to our parents. And that happens many, many times in the lives of our people in the country. It happened to me when my mother died, my dad's first wife, because I had to do many things that was apparently going to do, such as, for example, taking care of all the mechanics of the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
My dad said, I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only child,
mm-hmm.
so it fell on me.
Yes. Alone?
Yes.
And it's hard, especially if that's the first time around. I don't know if that was for you. Was it the first time you'd done that?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, very hard the first time around, especially if you haven't yet, you know, some kind of grief course, etc. One of the things I've done over the years, when I used to do this even when I taught 8th graders, I'd take a funeral home. I think it's really important that people get inside funeral homes when they're not grieving and find out what's happening there. Otherwise, I think that first time you walk into the room where all the caskets are, etc., that's kind of overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in and see that place as a business, which is what it is, and see what goes on and have the funeral director explain that all to you at some time when you're not loaded down with grief, that you can make that step more easily.
There was a point where I did step out too, and my children took care of it.
At the funeral?
Yeah, on choosing the casket.
Mm-hmm.
I says, it isn't important to me.
Mm-hmm.
The casket is not important to me. If there is any one of you that something is important,
mm-hmm.
why, I think you ought to consider
mm-hmm.
that. But then the next thing that I did, I feel our family has been pretty good for each other all the way around, and we've had a lot of jokes over the things, but the one thing I knew I wanted to do was to go down to the store and work with my son mm-hmm. through Christmas, because I needed him and he needed me. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was going to be very good for both of us. And so I, at first, my girl said, no, I don't think that's what you need. Mm-hmm. And I says, well, I do feel that's what I need, and I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And I plan to do it again this year. I don't know whether I'll plan to do it next year or not. But Diane said one day, she was out shopping for a dress. And she thought, oh, my dad would like that dress. I think I'll buy that dress. It was his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And so her husband says, boy, that's really reaching clear out for an excuse to buy a dress.
Yeah.
But, so in many ways I feel that our family, we have grieved together and we've had fun together over the same thing,
mm-hmm.
Enjoyed the things that Vern would have enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Are talked about, so I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like your daughter has some need to work through some of her grief by telling you what you need to do. Do you think that's?
Oh, I think that's possible. She's a counselor to begin
uh-huh.
with, and so I'm sure that that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. But you also sound like a person who handles things rather well yourself, and people knows what you like and what will be helpful to you. And you're not about to let somebody else take over for you.
And she knows that too.
That's all right.
She was thrilled good. That I decided to stay up here
uh-huh.
when she finally got the word
oh, okay.
that I'd stayed up here.
Good.
She really got some clothes to me in a hurry and some my medication and all that
uh-huh.
and says, I think it's great.
Great. Great. Okay. Any of these other ones here ring a bell?
I think my son has some of the fear that I may physically leave him, you know, may die.
Mm-hmm.
And and is concerned about that and wants to keep me there in King City.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want me to go away physically at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of it. If I stay there and be close to him, well, then he'll take care of me and won't let me die.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's part of his feeling.
Those are hard things when our parents die. I think about when my dad died and the realization when I was in Milwaukee, which is home, and I think at that time we lived in Kansas, I was thinking, it will never be the same coming here again. It will always be different now. And now since my mother has died, and we just before I left home, we sold the house. I think selling the house for me was almost harder than the funeral. The realization that we're just really closing down the chapter of our life. There won't be a place to go in Milwaukee anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, I have relatives there and some very nice people. It's not the same as having to go to Milwaukee. The last 17 years, I've gone there because my mother was there, you know?
Yeah.
And that home for 40 years.
Yes. And see, that's the difference with having roots.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really the difference with
yes.
having roots.
There's grief there over losing the house.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, you've moved a bit, though, haven't you?
Yes. And so Rick has no roots.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have felt how important it is mother-in-laws and father-in-laws in the family too. Because with my two daughters, I feel that they have family around them. They really don't need me as much as Rick does because I'm his only family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Monique's only family, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And with Becky too, their daughter. I'm much more important in their life than I am in the other two people's lives.
Although probably still important.
Oh, yes.
In their lives.
I don't feel unimportant,
yes.
But I feel that they have a lot more family around them.
You're more comfortable for them, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When people grieve at the same time, when they're both grieving the same loss and they're both in the same house, and I think here about the loss of our son, I know that this is on there anyway, I can't remember what time. The loss of a child produces many, many divorces because husband and wife grieve so differently.
Mm-hmm.
And when one is in doing this kind of thing to work through grief and the other one is doing that kind of thing to work through grief, both of them appropriate each for the other, they don't work well in bringing people together. So sometimes when I say that, I don't know if either of you have been in this role or concerned about this, but sometimes it's very important to seek help outside the family. If you're not getting the kind of help you need, or if you think that there are problems in the kind of help you are receiving from family, to be seeking that help outside the family. Seek it from your support groups, to seek it from your friends and people at church who have been in similar situations.
Mm-hmm.
I co-lead a group called Compassionate Friends, which is for parents who had a child die. And that's a place for people to come when husband and wife are grieving differently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think the grieving for a child would be an entirely different. I've never been in that situation, so I just feel it's an entirely different situation completely.
Every grief is different.
Yeah.
Okay? The loss of a father, in my life, and I think of the loss of my dad, and at that time, that was the first major death in my life. And I knew that he was going to die because he had a heart problem that was getting more and more severe. And I thought I wasn't going to be able to handle it. I didn't know that I could live without my dad. He was so important in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So you handle that in one way. Then my sister died 3 years later, very suddenly. And my sister and we were very close, and at the same time, we battled all the time. I always said we got along really well because once she lived in Philadelphia and I lived in Kansas, and we had these miles between us. When we were in the same room, we just didn't fare that well. And I know that death affected me in a different way. One of the problems I had with my sister's death was my feeling that, oh, there were all these unresolved things, and I wish I had said this or that or the other, you know.
I've never experienced either one of those.
With my son's death, this was just so unexpected.
Oh, yes.
So out of the blue, he was a person of such promise.
Was it an accident?
Yes,
caused
an auto accident. Yes. He was
my own feeling is that would be harder than a spouse or a father or a mother.
I will say this, it was terribly hot.
Yeah.
You think at that time that you had some experience of death, but when it's your son, it's very, very difficult.
And when they're that young, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my father-in-law, one of my sister-in-laws died, and I know his feeling was, why couldn't it have been me?
Mm-hmm.
I've had my full life.
Those were my husband's first words in the hospital. Why not me? It was just a terrible cry.
Mm-hmm.
there were really many things there to deal with. After that, my, within the next 6 months, a brother-in-law was also killed in an auto accident. My husband's brother died in an auto accident, and a month later, his father died. So that in my husband's family, there were these three major things just within a matter of 6 months. And again, these impact in still different ways. I think every grief is different. Every time we're dealing with a different, and yet there's a sameness. And I think the sameness that is there is that each death is a reminder of our own coming death. We are, in a sense, rehearsing our own death in the death of others. So there are things that are similar.
I've never felt that, but it may be an item that is present.
Yeah, I think it's there. We may not consciously deal with that. But I think I am, particularly as I've gotten older, and because I had my own, what you call near-death experience, and I'm more and more aware of the deaths of others. I think very recently watching my mother die, it's a long period of time of, in a sense, rehearsing that for myself.
That's an interesting concept.
Those are some of the things that...
And looking through your list here, this number six, I think, was very prominent in my grief situation.
Yeah.
I couldn't change the situations. I can recall many, many years ago, I still recall waking up in the morning and saying, well, it just isn't true.
Oh,
my
yes.
mother hasn't died.
Oh, yes.
She's going to be out there and yeah. get up.
I didn't say it wasn't true with my son, but I wanted it not to be true. I wanted to wake up tomorrow and find this was all a bad dream.
Yeah.
I think that's a kind of common. There's nothing you can do when someone else is grieving also. To change that for them, you want to take their grief away. You can't do that. I wanted to do that with my surviving children. I wanted to take the grief away from all of them. And not only can't you, you ought not to take it. It is important for people to do their own grieving, but you mothers, I think, have the tendency you want to protect.
Yes.
I don't want that to hurt.
Mentioning number four, I had some fear there that my son would wonder why I couldn't have taken better care of his dad. Mm-hmm. Because when my son came down to California from Port Angeles to take over the store so his dad could retire again, they became a lot closer than they had been for years. And he says he was not only my father, he was my best friend. And so I just wondered if he was going to be angry with me because I didn't take better care of his dad.
As if you could have.
Right. But so far I haven't...
Guilt goes with all deaths to some degree.
Yeah.
You know, because with our son, we could do amazing things. Like if only we bought him a better car instead of saying,
Can't
have a car. And he scraped up enough money to buy his own. It wasn't much.
Yeah.
You know, we do things like that. All kinds of ways we could have been God, but we are not God, are we? Real quickly, let me just run by this. That's grieving children, because children, I think, are the lost ones in all of this, and in funerals, they're often left out. They're often left home. Because they don't grieve in the same way as adults do, people will tell you they're not grieving. Oh, they're doing fine. I remember when my uncle died, I won't go into detail about the funeral, but I thought it was the grossest funeral I ever attended. And it was, to me, the pastor's fault. A pastor who was really not on the ball, as far as I was concerned. However, the family, the immediate family, thought it was wonderful. It was their concept of how a funeral should be. Well, this included the child sitting on the front row looking at his grandpa, his grandson, now looking at grandpa, with whom he'd been very, very close, spent much time together. And the pastor saying things about this body that's going to rise up out of this coffin. I thought this pastor knows nothing about children. Be a lot more cautious in his language. This young man did well, though, according to all the family. He's taking it really well. And I thought, he's not taking it well. He's not crying, for one thing, that I'm seeing. But it was not my business. Well, about 6 months later, I heard how the child was in the hospital with severe stomach problems mm-hmm. that they could not seem to diagnose the source of, and so forth. And it was my impression, and I'm not a counselor, but it was my impression that this child had internalized his grief because he was supposed to be Christian and act like all these other Christian yeah. people around him. You know, and I really thought that was too bad. But all these various symptoms here, the decline in school performance, starting to have lots of fights, bedwetting, nightmares, behaviors that are unrealistic for children, return to fantasy world. Any number of these are grief. And they don't just happen over death, by the way. They happen over major moves. They happen over all kinds yes. of things that children perceive as grief.
My, she would have been 10 at the time, 10-year-old granddaughter, took it upon herself to comfort me.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever she'd see me cry, she'd come put her arm around
yes.
me and pat him.
Good for her, because she was really using that method too, I think, as a way of helping herself.
Mm-hmm.
Encourage her to do that, and encourage her to talk about her feelings. Do you have younger grandchildren than 10?
No.
Yeah.
She's my youngest.
10 is my understanding at that age there. Beginning to have some ideas about abstract things and a little bit of concept of death and what it all means. Younger children have a very hard time because they think in concrete terms and they don't really understand what's happening there.
And I think they often suffer from adults attempting to shield them.
Oh, yes.
I think so too.
The worst thing you can do. Let the children in on the grief. Let the children be part of the family gathering.
I read somewhere where children are often kept from involvement in the two most significant events in anyone's life, birth and death.
Yes.
And we just don't let them see anything yes. being born, particularly
yes.
human beings. Oh, no.
We didn't let
taste.
Husbands do that until it
was right. And then with death, no, kid,
yeah.
this is something that...
You'll understand better when you grow up.